Cornucopia Radio presents.
Welcome to A Little Bit Racy, the improvisation comedy panel show that you just couldn't make up. I'm your host, James Cottle, and if you're listening in 2025, hey, remember lasagna? What was that all about? In the show, panelists race against a time limit of just 3 minutes to improvise their way to a destination. They begin from different starting points and must use an assortment of randomly assigned objects, companions, and modes of transport, but they must keep all of them with them when they travel. They must also overcome another panelist who will improvise obstacles to try and stop them. So, let's meet today's panelists. After 16 cups of coffee, he's raring to go to the toilet. It's Pip Mason.
Thank you.
Billy Connolly, Michael McIntyre, Eddie Izzard. This panelist has heard of them all. It's Jack Prankett. She's on fire today, so please locate your nearest exit and congregate in the car park. It's Joe Darcy. And open up the top drawer and pull out that same old dusty relic. It's Tom Harrison. So, let's move on and find out what the challenge is tonight in round one. The fictional news has been dominated recently by the controversial suggestion that legendary band The Beatles didn't actually write any of their own music. Some old loon in Coventry has made the audacious claim that he actually penned all of their hits and has launched a smear campaign online against the unforgettable rock icons Sir Paul McCartney and the other one, drummer guy. Tired of seeing his good name dragged through the mud, Sir Paul sends you to Coventry to silence the pest. So, attempting the challenge first will be Pip. And your randomly assigned object, companion, mode of transport and starting points are...
Yep.
A pregnancy simulator suit. The Stig. A grand piano is your mode of transport.
Right.
And your starting point is football legend Ronaldo's all-you-can-eat buffet in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Because he's large. And so that's your job, Pip.
Okay.
Jack, your job is to stop him by improvising obstacles and throwing whatever you can in his way. So, best of luck to you, Pip. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Right, so we're in Sao Paulo in the football legend Ronaldo's all-you-can-eat buffet. I'm actually there on a date with the Stig, who it's not going that well because it's very hard to have conversations with him.
Yep.
Because he doesn't talk, and he's not really eating anything because he can't get it through the helmet visor. So he's just sat there. He very kindly is wearing a pregnancy simulator suit, so we're sat closer to the buffet car.
Play that card.
And just at the right angle so we have easy access to the toilet. So that it was considerate. It was a considerate day. And then I got the text from Paul, and it's like, I go to him and go, we have to sort this stuff out. So we put down our forks. We don't even pay the bill. We just storm out of there because this is an emergency.
And the manager runs after you.
I explained to him that the Beatles have been accused of not writing any of their music.
That's all right. He's a big fan.
And he's a big fan. Thank you for settling that out. In fact, he gives us our blessing and just goes. Right, we rush to the Stig's ride, which is randomly a grand piano because, of course, the Stig can drive anything.
Yep.
Absolutely
also,
anything.
The piano's not tuned.
The piano is not tuned. That should not affect its aerodynamic nature on the road. So we rush to the nearest port in Sao Paulo, just bounding along. Admittedly, the piano sounds rubbish because it's out of tune,
yep.
But it's still hurtling along. And we negotiate a passage on the nearest ferry to head straight back up to...
How do you negotiate?
How do we negotiate? Yes. The Stig offers to be a bouncer. On the first class carriage, because he just stands there with his arms crossed and doesn't let anyone in.
Marvelous.
So he's an excellent bouncer, because he just stands there looking all intimidating in white. And we stow away our piano. He's still wearing the pregnancy simulator suit. I have no idea why. I think he just likes it. He has accepted it as part of himself now, and he's just enjoying being fat, really.
A crowd of people have come over, and they're asking the Stig when it's due.
1 minute left.
Well, he can't answer them because he can't talk, so he just sits there looking at them and being so intimidated by his gaze, the people just back off. Oh. We actually have a really lovely trip on the ferry across the ocean.
Oh, that's nice.
We even managed to find someone. Well, we don't actually tune the piano, but we still try and play, you know, a few of Beatle hits on it.
The tunes anger the gods and you are hurled upwards.
Oh yes, I forgot that Poseidon doesn't like the Beatles.
No,
okay.
So, to
counteract it, we quickly rock out Jumping Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones, and that seems to placate the sea god. And he goes back to sleep. And then we arrive at the docks in Britain. We fire
Britain docks, 10 seconds left.
Britain docks. We fire up the piano and we rush to the place where we were going. Was it...
Well, it's just Coventry.
Coventry! We rush to Coventry and the Stig gets us there in record time on his piano.
Excellent. Pip Mason! Very good stuff. Attempting the challenge next will be Jack. So let's find out what you've got tonight. You have with you a nice warm scarf, David Beckham, a Bugatti Veyron, which is actually just a shell and operated by pedals on the inside. And your starting point is Vladimir Putin's hot tub in Siberia, Russia. So best of luck to Jack and best of luck to Pip trying to stop him. Jack, your time starts now.
Okay, so there, me and Vlad hanging it, chilling, maxing on cooling, sitting in the hot tub. I'm like, oh my goodness, I've just got a mental block here and thought, wait a second, there's something wrong with Paul McCartney. I've got to go find out. All right, so I get out.
As you stand up out of the hot tub, you're not wearing any trunks, and Vlad is, and this is a terrible social faux pas.
Luckily, however, because it's so cold in Siberia, I figured top half's going to be cold, got my warm scarf on, stick it round the groin as I get out. Sure, you've got a moist scarf, but what are you going to do? Anyway, so then get in the old Bugatti Veyron. David Beckham's like, hey, wait up. Because, you know, he don't want to be left in Russia on his own. He needs a carer. So he gets in. We're there, pedal away, like, you know, kids and everything, all the way over Russia.
David Beckham pulls his right leg, unfortunately, because he's pedaling that hard.
Oh, David, that was a mistake. So David gets out of the car. I go around the other side. Do some exercises on his leg, you know, pulling, pushing, basic.
Just warming it up.
Warming it up, basically.
Some light physio.
Yeah, light physio, exactly. And then we get back in the Veyron, but this time I make him push it just because he made me get out of the car. We go over Russia, onto that bit which is near Russia, the end, the sea. So we get to the sea, the Atlantic Sea.
Is that near Russia?
I have no idea.
Why
not? So we're there near that sea. Then David Beckham says, hey, wait a second, I'm also a good swimmer because I've done swimmer ads. Okay. So I get on top of David. I'm like, you're right, let's go and swim across.
1 minute left.
He paddled his little tuckus away.
Unfortunately, he only knows doggy paddle, not breaststroke, so he's going slightly slower than you would have realised.
Oh, fiddlesticks. Luckily, I say, hey, if you learn how to swim really fast, I'll give you a nice scarf. And he says, oh, great. Then he swims faster. We get there.
Wait, where's the Bugatti Veyron? You have to keep...
Yeah, you have to keep the Veyron.
That's on top.
You?
Just on top of David.
It's quite light.
I guess it is just a shell, yeah.
But because David Beckham is a footballer, all he has is lower body strength, not upper body strength, to carry the Veyron.
And he walks on the water.
And sinks to his death.
So you're saying that David Beckham is the new Messiah, basically?
Well, I didn't want to say it, but yes. Essentially, David Beckham is the new Messiah. He gets us to
10 seconds left.
Using his magical Christian powers.
I guess we'll allow it. Jack Blanket! Bending the laws of reality itself. Okay, we're now moving on to our second pair. So attempting this first will be Joe. Let's find out what you have with you. You have a garden gnome who changes position every time you look at it. Sir Ian McKellen is your companion. Your mode of transport is a horse box with no horses. That's those things on the motorway that, like, trailers that carry the horses. And your starting point is a superhero outfit shop in Cape Town, South Africa. So, best of luck to Joe and best of luck to Tom trying to stop her. Joe, your time starts now.
We've been talking about doing this for ages. He's a bit theatrical, so of course we have to go to Cape Town for these capes. Fine, yeah. We're there, whatever. We're trying them all on, and there's this gnome there, and every time I look, he's in a different position.
Yeah.
I think, what on earth is going on here? He's not even part of the shop. He's just decided to get involved. I said to Ian, what should I do with this? And he said, oh, take him, darling. So I did.
Good impression. It's like he's in the room. Good.
Thank you. You shall not part. Yeah, so anyway. So I took the gnome, and we just thought, we've got to get out of here. We're still in a gnome. Let's bung a load of capes inside a carrier bag and jip off. Because we're here, we've got to get to Coventry. Fine, we'll do it. So we're on our way, and we think we'll have to go north, won't we? So we start showing off the gnome to people. They think it's some kind of voodoo, some kind of crazy magical powers.
The gnome keeps disappearing every time it looks in someone, occasionally to a point where it's annoyingly out of view, so you have to go and find it to, like, bring it back into view again.
No, I mean, you're almost there. We don't have to bring it back. What he's doing is he's moving forward, and that's exactly what we need on the journey. Well done.
Those gnomes are annoyingly smart.
It works for us. Me and Ian were well chuffed. So we just keep on following this gnome. Every time somebody looks, he ends up 100 metres ahead. We've got the capes. We're just keeping on following. It's fine. Eventually, we get to this peak where they speak Afrikaans, and there's this coach from Holland, and they've just done a holiday there, so they're on the way back. We start doing all these magic tricks with a cape, making the gnome appear, disappear, different positions. They say, that is amazing. Come back to Holland, show us. We say, take us as far as Germany. We're away. So we get there. Going along on this thing, and then it's time for us to go, buy Germans, buy Afrikaans, wonderful. Okay. You laugh, but this is what happened. So, we're outside this school. You wouldn't believe it, but they're only twinned with Coventry. Amazing.
Oh, wow, that is
really convenient.
I can't believe it.
A weirdly, highly coincidental thing to happen.
Listen, I didn't start the war. This is a thing. And they're going to go over to go
everywhere
to Coventry.
Everywhere got bombed. It's fine. That's what they unified
as
over.
Did Coventry.
Everything is flattened, yeah.
This is why they twinned. Yeah. Do you know what's great? Is that you understand?
I'm a compliant sort of person.
1 minute left.
You're a legend. So they're actually planning a trip. So in exchange for us doing a magic show at the school, again, Nomi is loving the attention. He's all over the place. Ian, he's got a bit of drama. He's got his capes. We're fine there for a couple of days until they get this trip across to Coventry. Smashing. Mm. We just go on top. We've got capes. We start flying. Add a bit of pizzazz. It's fine. Ian loves it. We get to the cathedral. Where are we in Coventry again?
Just Coventry.
So we get there and we have to do passports. Obviously, we have some problems at the border because the
it's
gnome.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's got his passport with him, but he just looks different every time you look at the photo. And him, and he's in a different... Is he the same guy? I just don't know. Ian, meanwhile, is loving, like, having people look at his photos. He
10 seconds
left.
Start
saying instead. Basically, we rom up the M6. We're in Coventry. Germans are happy. Cathedral's dead. There's the Beatles. Bosh.
What a story. Joker! Fantastic stuff. And now finally attempting round one will be Tom. Let's find out what you have with you. You have a life-sized cutout of Stephen Fry.
That'll be handy.
Your companion is the current cast of EastEnders.
Okay. I haven't seen EastEnders in a long time.
Your mode of transport is a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And your starting point is a really cramped train carriage in Mumbai, India.
Okay.
So have fun cramming that all into there. Best of luck to Tom and best of luck to Joe, trying to stop him. Tom, your time starts now.
Okay, well, first of all, we're all inside the train carriage. And yes, I said inside, you racists. You can ride inside a train carriage in India. It's, you know, not modern. So we kind of step off. Oh, my knowledge of Indian geography is about as good as my knowledge of everything geography. But somewhere near the coast. We'll let you fill in the pieces there. Where I use my barrel as a raft, surprise, surprise, and pedal using my Stephen Fry life-size cutout, which I kind of work up an expert sort of oaring thing with.
Unfortunately, Doc Cotton's got there before you and she's only gone and done smoke holes all the way through. Stephen's practically useless at this point.
Okay, well, I'll plug it up with Shane Ritchie's hair gel. Is he even on the show? I don't care. I'm living blissfully in ignorance. I can bring whoever I want. The Mitchell brothers are in. So we'll keep peddling with our slightly gross, slimy Stephen Fry cut out, working our way coast by coast, stopping off occasionally for jelly deals to
and it's when you stop off, of course, that the police catch up with you and wonder why you're harbouring the Mitchell brothers who are convicted felons.
Oh, hand over the Mitchell brothers to law. Like, later, Mitchell brothers, I hope you don't catch up for the weird, dark, early storylines where you actually killed people and stuff. It's always part of my game is where do I wash up? Where does the line of cheating start? So I wash up in Coventry. No. let's say France. France is nice.
I'll allow it.
And of course, using the EastEnders occasionally do sort of forays into France, they're sort of vaguely respected there. But also probably not, but we'll say there is
1 minute left.
And so we roll... in fact, another Cockney joke, we roll out the barrel. completely off the top of my head. I'm
Danny crazy. Dyer loves that one.
I have Danny Dyer. The most notorious bad man in all of... not having a career in anything, really.
Unfortunately, the barrel was an old sherry barrel and you had a coachload of Spanish tourists there in the south of France where you are, which is very Catholic.
Okay, yeah.
They see you getting a barrel out thinking it's all about St. Valentine. Then they see Stephen Fry, a known atheist, with stigmata in the form of burns on his hands. And you're in a whole load of trouble.
Well, I'll claim that I'm as part of a pilgrimage redeeming Stephen Fry for the comments. No, when Stephen Fry just laid out God in a sick MLG styly lately, I'll just be like, yeah, he's come to repent his sins. Don't follow this up in any way. I'm getting on a ferry now, later.
10 seconds left.
So pull into Coventry. I'm like... Danny, seek out the... What
the heathen who is saying that he's written all the songs. But
that's right, yeah. I'm like, let's find this guy and possibly clear Paul McCartney and other guy's name. Yeah.
Very good. Marvellous stuff. Fantastic round there from both pairs. But, of course, there can only be one winner from each pair. And those two winners are Pip and Tom.
Thank you.
Congratulations. We now move swiftly on to round two. In this round, the winning panellists must improvise their way to a whole new destination. They may use their object, companion and mode of transport again, but this time they are allowed to dispose of them if they wish. However, the defeated panellists will try and stop them once again, this time using their own object, companion and mode of transportation to improvise obstacles in order to prevent them from becoming the a little bit racy plagiarism preventer for Paul McCartney. So, let's see what the challenge is in round two. With the Coventry-based pensioner successfully dispatched in cold blood, you call Sir Paul to give him the good news. Unfortunately, his response is not as overwhelmingly positive as you had hoped. He is furious that he is now an accomplice to the murder of a relatively harmless keyboard warrior and orders you to dispose of the body sharpish. He sends you to his yellow submarine off the coast of Maine, where you can pilot the colourful craft to the depths of the ocean, disposing of the body there. So, attempting the challenge first will be Pip, trying to get to Maine, who, just to remind everyone, has with him his pregnancy simulator suit, the Stig, and his grand piano. But Jack will be trying to stop him now, using his nice warm scarf, David Beckham, and the Bugatti Veyron operated by pedals. So, best of luck to you both. Pip, your time starts now.
Okay, so the Stig went and horribly murdered the pensioner, which was a bit of a turn-off on our date. it's kind of a side of him that I wasn't expecting to see, and his white outfit is now just splattered with red.
Lovely.
And it's like, you know, Paul is not happy, we need to get rid of this. So we get up what's left and put it in a bin bag, and we cob it into the hood of the grand piano. And I ordered the Stig to fire it up because we need to get to Maine. So he pulls out the A to Z and finds out where it is, and we just set off at rocket pace.
It begins with M, so yeah. Conveniently in the middle.
Yes, he sets off there. We're bundling down the motorway on his turbo grand piano.
But a Bugatti Veyron hits you with a, with a scarf.
Right, okay, so we tried to get sideswiped by just this madman peddling a Bugatti Veyron.
It's David Beckham.
It's David Beckham. Well, unfortunately, due to his previous, you know, groin and leg injury, he's still not as fast as the piano, which is still hurtling down. So we just overtake it, and we do this very cool thing like off Fast and the Furious where he sends out the scarf, I wrap it around my hand, pull it, and slam his head against his own... his own steering
dashboard.
Just keep pulling it until he gets knocked out and he crashes and he goes off the motorway and explodes into flames, which I have no idea how because there's no mechanical parts in the Veyron.
It was a very impressive.
And it's like, wow, that was cool. So we hurtle down and we get to Maine. And we get to the...
Really?
Yeah. Why, where is Maine? Oh. Yes, is it, yeah, because it's Maine. Where's Maine? Is it Maine?
Maine's in... it's mainland, isn't it, in America? Isn't
it? Oh, it's in America. Right, okay. Well, it's a good... I don't know. It's that Maine. Okay, well, luckily, the piano floats, so I can shove it just straight to the coast. Before I do, though, I have to part ways with the Stig and go, like, look, I don't think this is going to work out.
You're leaving him with a baby.
I've took that off him to use as a life preserver.
Okay, lovely.
So
1 minute left.
Yeah, so I'm afraid, you know, this isn't working out. So, you know, let's just be, you know, it's not you, it's me. I'm not really comfortable being like...
But David Beckham, coming from the flames, because he was...
David Beckham.
A flaming David Beckham, who's been given super intelligence by the smack to the steering wheel, comes out...
So just normal intelligence.
Yeah, pretty much. And ruins this awkward moment between you and the Stig.
Right, so the Stig, still enamoured with me, even though he's faced this horrible rejection, in an effort to try and win me back, breaks his usual calm demeanour, pulls off his helmet, and and he looks, you know, very much just like, well, he doesn't really have a face, it's just blank. Mm. And he just proceeds to batter David Beckham's head in with the crash helmet.
But David Beckham loves you too. Are you going to let these feelings just go away?
Yes.
Oh.
So they're there fighting over me. I used a distraction to get away on the piano, and I managed to... It takes a while. I row across the Atlantic, and I get to America.
10 seconds left.
I then sell the piano to an old jazz player in return for his car. I get his car, I drive across the rest of mainland America, and I reach the yellow submarine to dispose of the body in the Mariana Trench.
Very good. Kit Mason. Nice and efficient, considering you didn't really know the end destination.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got there. That's fine.
Now attempting the challenge will be Tom, who, just to remind everyone, has with him his life-size cutout of Stephen Fry, the cast of EastEnders, which includes Danny Dyer, and and your barrel. But Joe will be trying to stop him now, using the gnome that changes position every time you look at it, Sir Ian McKellen, and her horse box. So... best of luck to you both. Tom, your time starts now.
Okay, first of all, if I had to dispose of a body, it would be dunking it in industrial acid and then pouring the remains into the runoff of a dog food factory. So I hear. but ignoring that and acting like the amateurs that we frankly are, we'll head off to Maine for some reason. I'm going to have to take a zero tolerance policy to any sort of mercy given to the EastEnders cast, which is something I've wanted to say for a long time. I'll force them to build me like a Viking longship, just because that's cool, to propel me across the main.
But instead, Ian McKellen shows up and he shames them all with their poor acting skills and their lack of future in acting, and they all go away crying.
Okay, well, the thing is, I'm not a bad enough person to violently attack Ian McKellen. I mean, he's a national treasure, but Danny Dyer is. So I set my pit bull of Danny Dyer onto him, and then we cast off as they fight to new shores that have been discovered for quite a long time. But new shores to me. I've never even been on a plane before. I'll use the life-size cutout of Stephen Fry as an additional single sail to speed our progress. Shane Ritchie's Grease slightly slapping us in the face, but you have to make some sacrifices in the name of body disposal, I guess. I guess wash up in sort of New York way. I know Maine has a coast, but I'm no monster. where we use our barrel jauntily and in a sort of Captain Jack Sparrow-esque way to, like, with a plank on it to use. I'm trying to use it as an actual means of transportation instead of just building vehicles out of stuff.
But you lose your way and you ask this gnome which way you should go.
Oh, no.
Several of them ask him and he points one way. They turn around, they ask, where are you going? Where should we go? The other way. And the whole split up all over the United States and you're left with only one member.
Okay. And that member will be... I've not watched EastEnders in a while. I don't know who the most useful member is. Is Doc Cotton still?
Yeah.
We'll go for Doc Cotton. Yeah, she'll come into her own, I'm sure. So I just blink and stare into the eyes of the gnome until it teleports to Antarctica just by random chance. And then me and Doc Cotton, armed with nothing but a packet of Benson and Hedges and our will to dispose of this maggot-infested corpse, crawling, if it takes it, on our hands and knees.
But suddenly,
oh God!
I throw in your path my bag of capes. They're all creased. Dot cannot stand it. She has to hide it.
Okay, at the moment I appear defeated, I turn around and I light up Dot Cotton's last cigarette. I don't condone smoking, by the way. And I say something like, if you forget cigarettes on your couch, it may cause combustion. And then I throw it onto the pile of capes and watch as it burns. It's a cacophony of burning capes.
10 seconds left.
And walk into Maine triumphant and asthmatic because I really... That's why I quit smoking in the first place.
So, fantastic work there from everyone. We are now going to find out the conclusion of today's story and, of course, who is the winner of this A Little Bit Racy. It's over. You take a big sigh of relief as you watch the body sink down to the bottom of the ocean before driving the submarine back to the surface, heading home and laying low for a few days. Then Sir Paul McCartney gives you a call to say thanks. Very relieved that you managed to successfully dispose of the body of Ringo Starr. Who? You know, the guy who narrated Thomas the Tank Engine. Oh, brilliant! I loved him! And with all that said and done, tonight's winner is... Tom Harrison!
Yay! Thank you!
That's all we got time for on this episode. I'd like to thank tonight's panellists, Pip Mason, Jack Prankett, Joe Darcy and Tom Harrison. I've been your host, James Cottle, and I'm off to see a man about a lasagna. See you next time! Enjoyed A Little Bit Racy and would like to find out more? Follow us on Twitter at A Little Bit Racy and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/A Little Bit Racy.